facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Fabulous Friday to you. So happy that you're with me on the Cale Clark Show today on Relevant Radio. We made it through another week, and what a week it was. So much stuff that we had to talk about this week on the show. You're definitely going to want to download the podcast from this week's shows. They were really, really good, really eclectic, a lot of different topics, a lot of great guests that we had this week too. But tonight's show, I've got something really special up my sleeve for you guys tonight. So give me a call if you want to get in on the conversation. 1-888-914-9149 is the studio number to call. 1-888-914-9149. It's toll free. The call's on me. You can also email me, kale@relevantradio.com, or you can follow me on Twitter. Hey, it's Follow Friday. Give me a follow, man. I need some more followers. I got to catch Patrick Madrid. He has 70,000 followers. I'm a little bit behind him, just a little bit. You'll see when you go to my account, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. Hey, Rome wasn't built in a day, right? We also have a show account as well, at Cale Clark Show. Definitely follow that. Lucas and Karen are all over that account, tweeting out incredible things, retweeting things. And I should have a disclaimer on that one, you know. These tweets are not necessarily from Cale Clark himself. So watch what you say there on that account, guys. It's got my name on it. I could get sued here. Anyways, let me ask you this question. Has anybody ever come up to you and said, you know what, you Catholics, you Christians, you just use God as a psychological crutch. You know, you need help to get through life. You can't deal with your own problems. So you just use God as a crutch, your imaginary friend in the sky, the flying spaghetti monster, if you will. Has anybody ever said this to you? How do you respond to this charge, you know, that God is a psychological crutch for us as believers? Give me a call if this has ever happened to you. 1-888-914-9149. Amy Orr Ewing, who is the president of the Oxford Center for Apologetics in Oxford, England, talks about her experience with this. She wrote an article about it. And she said that she got into a cab in London one day, and she had her Bible with her. So the cabbie saw her Bible, and he just decided to just spout off. He launched into this tirade against Christianity, and he explained that belief in God is nothing but a crutch for weak, pathetic people who don't have the strength to take personal responsibility for their own lives. So Amy Orr Ewing said, you know, probably with a touch of sarcasm in her voice, well, thank you very much for your opinion. I really appreciate that. He just kept going on and on. He wouldn't stop. He said, well, yeah, I'm just trying to say this for your own benefit. You know, a girl like you, he said, doesn't need religion. I guess there's a bit of a compliment in there somewhere. But no, that's not condescending at all, you know. A girl like you doesn't need religion. Anyways, so this idea that our faith is a crutch, you know, that we're needy people that simply need something to trust in, so we invent this thing called God. She says that this attitude is based on a number of bad assumptions. And the first one is this. This is the concept that people think that God is merely a psychological projection, that he doesn't actually exist in any real sense, but he only exists in the minds of his followers who have created them out of whole, you know, who have created God out of whole cloth here, you know, just inventing this concept out of a need for what? A father figure, or a need to give significance to our existence. We exist, we need a reason for it. I don't have one, so I'm going to create this one called God. And obviously, the most famous proponent of such a view was the neurologist and actually the founder of the discipline of psychoanalysis, Sigmund Freud. And we all know about Freud, right? He hailed from Austria. Now, when you talk about Austria, you got to get this straight, okay? Don't make the mistake that Lloyd Christmas did in the 1994 comedy classic Dumb and Dumber.
That's a lovely accent you have. New Jersey?
Austria.
Austria! Well then, good day, mate. Let's put another shrimp on the barbie.
Yeah.
Let's not.
Yeah, so Sigmund Freud was from Austria, like that lady, not Australia. Lloyd Christmas. I can't believe you made that mistake. Anyways, so Freud was the sort of pioneer, not only of psychoanalysis, but of the idea that one's view of God springs from the view that one has of one's own father. So when people grow up, or so he thought, and they find themselves thrust into the cruel, cold world that is often unforgiving, often harsh, they look for a haven of security. They're looking for some sort of protection from this harsh world that we live in. And when you're an adult, guess what? You can't, you know, run to mommy and daddy for protection. Well, I guess you could, but you'd completely lose all your dignity if you did that. So as an adult, you can't really do that, you know, and still save face. So we look for another quote-unquote father to do this job for us. And that leads us to projecting this idea of a higher power, or what we might call God. So that, if you're just tuning in, by the way, that's Sigmund Freud's view, not mine, okay? So let's get that straight. So from this point of view, you know, God is merely something that we've cooked up in our human minds, a projection that we've made that comes from our human need and desire rather than what's actually real, distinct and real reality. Real reality? Can I even say that? But I just did. So if you ask Sigmund Freud, he thinks that God is actually made in our image, the ultimate wish fulfillment, he would say, the end product of a human desire for a loving father, someone to take care of us. But can God really be explained away quite so easily? All right, so Amy Orr Ewing says this. One obvious point, if someone were to sort of throw this in your face, one obvious point that you could make in response is this. You could say, listen, Freud, your argument about projection, you know, we project this idea, we make up this idea about God, God the Father, that cuts both ways, you know, because you could say, hey, Freud, you and other atheists deny the existence of God because you want to escape from a father figure. You don't need a father figure. You actually want to escape from a father figure. Or you could say, hey, your belief that the non-existence of God is a fact, that springs from your own deep-seated desire for no father figure to exist. So this idea of projection, it's not really a good argument because that can be used against you. You know, you want God to exist, therefore you make up this, you know, fake God in Freud's view. But you could easily say to Freud, hey, you don't want God to exist, so you're just projecting his non-existence, right? That doesn't solve anything. So what is it? I mean, that's really a bad argument. So the other thing, too, is that this Freudian slip, if you will, in terms of a bad argument. I worked on that one all day, folks. This can't really provide us with an explanation for why people convert to the faith. Now, people convert to the faith for all kinds of different reasons. Let's be straight about that. But what about people like C.S. Lewis, right? Speaking of Oxford, speaking of England, C.S. Lewis would have rather not believed, you know, but he found himself compelled to believe based on the evidence. And he didn't necessarily want this to be true, but he was compelled because the historical evidence for the faith, for Christ, was more than solid. And we've talked about this a lot on the Cale Clark Show and also on our sister program, The Faith Explained, on Relevant Radio. The historical evidence for the faith is absolutely overwhelming at times. So now, it's not to the point where somebody couldn't wiggle out from underneath it. And I think this is God leaving us an out, and this is where faith comes in, where if we look at the evidence with an open mind and a pure heart. Now, I mean, whose heart is totally pure, that they're completely going to be looking at this objectively. We try to be as objective as we can. But somebody of goodwill who is looking at the evidence has enough evidence to go on to take that step of faith and put their trust in God. But also, there's enough wiggle room, I suppose, that you could, you know, find an out, you know, if that's not where you want to go, if you actually don't want to change your life. And I was just reading today, I'll have to find this tweet for you later, but a very well-known figure admitted that he didn't really want to look into the evidence for God because he knew he'd have to change his life if he found it compelling. And he just said, I'm just not going to look. You know, I don't know if that's a great excuse on Judgment Day, but anyways, I'll tell you who that was later on. I'll look that up at the break. But speaking of C.S. Lewis, Amy Orr Ewing brings up another point. One of the things that C.S. Lewis said in his writings was that the fact that we desire God is in some ways evidence for his existence right there. The fact that we have been created by God to look for him should tell us something. Because one of the things that C.S. Lewis said was that for, and I'm kind of just giving a, you know, a paraphrase of what he's saying, it's not an exact quote, but it was something to the effect of, for every, you know, natural desire that we seem to have in this world, there is a corresponding fulfillment of that desire. So for example, if you're thirsty, there is such a thing as water to drink. If you're hungry, there is such a thing as food. If you have desires, certain desires, sexual desires, and sexual desire is good. It was created by God. But there's a proper place for that to be channeled, and that's within marriage. So for sexual desire, there is marriage. There is the gift of marriage. But there's a desire that we have, C.S. Lewis says, that nothing in this world can satisfy. There's one desire that we have that nothing in this world can satisfy. So the conclusion must be, I was made for another world. I was made for another world. And this is very similar to something that St. Augustine said, of course, in his book, The Confessions, in book one of the Confessions, at the very beginning of the book. You have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you. And of course, St. Augustine tried everything under the sun to try to fulfill that, you know, kind of Grand Canyon of, you know, this gaping hole that he couldn't find in the created world. And he wound up eventually finding it in the uncreated God, the uncreated God. And that's what satisfied him ultimately. And that's kind of the same thing that C.S. Lewis said. So we're not born with these desires unless there's some means to satisfy them. So the only proper conclusion you can really make here is let's investigate the evidence for the existence of God. Another thing, too, I want to get back to, just I just want to finish up here, and then we'll take your phone calls. What about this idea that God is a crutch? Well, you know what? If God really does exist, and we believe that there is evidence for his existence, a lot of evidence for his existence, and that he revealed himself ultimately to the world in Christ, and that Christ founded a church, and he gave us these sacraments like the Eucharist, and we can be a part of this church and experience him in word, in sacrament, in prayer, in the church, in our brothers and sisters in the church, in the communion of saints— then, you know, if these things are real and these are real helps to us, if he's given us the scriptures to encourage us and to instruct us and to give us hope, well, guess what? You want to call that a crutch? I'm going to use it. Is it a crutch? Heck yeah, it's a crutch. And you know what? I'm going to use that crutch. I'm going to use that crutch. If God gives us all of these helps and God is real, I'm going to use it because we do need help to get through this world. We do need that. If God gives us help to live constructively in this world, that's not a reason to disbelieve. Okay? If you find protection from the world and you find hope and healing in the church, that doesn't mean that God is an irrational superstition. If there's evidence for God, it means that he's real. And so, we don't do this in any other area of life, by the way. You know, if the crutch is real, use it. We always want to access real sources of support and relationship that are there for us. Amy Orr Ewing makes this point. You know, I would say this. Let's take the example of dentistry, right? I mean, I suppose I could watch a bunch of YouTube videos and, you know, get a drill out of the toolbox and try to, you know, fix my own molar here. You know, I suppose I could try that. You know, get a little liquid paper, you know, that looks real, you know. But I'm just not an expert at that. I'm going to go where I can find resources to help me. I could try to do it myself, but that wouldn't be wise. Because there is such a thing as dentistry. There are medical professionals that can help you. Or let's take the example of friendship. You know, friends are a source of support. They're a source of relationship. They share our lives. They help us get through tough times. Now, you could say, no, I don't need friends. I'm going to go it alone. I'm just going to tough it out. I don't need to talk to anybody else. I don't need to listen to relevant radio and listen to my friend Cale Clark on the show. I don't need that. I could just stare at the wall. Yeah, you could. It's not as much fun. as listening to the show, of course. But why would you want to do that? Why would you want to go through life without friends and companions? It just doesn't make any sense. So, you know, if God is real, yeah, sure, you could use him as a crutch. Absolutely. He's a real crutch, and he'll help you. He'll help you to walk through this life, through this world, as it were. So there you go. There's something you could say there. And Lucas, I have to tell you this, by the way, Lucas, my producer, Lucas Holt. If Sigmund Freud couldn't lean on God as a crutch, does that mean he'd be destined to make yet another Freudian slip and fall down? Okay. All right. I don't know.
I'm going to answer in the affirmative.
I think so. I think yep. I think it's a good way to go. All right. Oh, my computer just conked out on me. Just hang on for 1 second, folks. We're going to go to the phones right now. We're going to go to Stan, who is calling from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Stan, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thank you for letting me in. I got to tell you, I'm a Protestant, and I'm crazy about this show. So good.
Thank you, sir.
Catholic Church sort of entering into the current culture, and it just makes me happy. I'm actually a missionary in the Czech Republic. And it's interesting. It's a 99% atheist country. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So the Christians and Catholics don't make a big distinction. They're like, we're all we've got. So we better stick together because it's 99-1. And it's cool to see that here. But I just wanted to give you a little perspective. First of all, I agree with you. I generally don't argue the crutch argument. I'm like, yeah, I'm broken. Broken people need a crutch. So do you, by the way. But, you know, it's kind of interesting. The Holy Spirit kind of spoke to me. And in the future, when I hear that, I think I'll just kind of redirect and say it's actually more like glasses. You know, a crutch and glasses both help us with a deficiency. But, you know, through the lens of Christ, through the lens of the Bible, I see more clearly. So I don't really think so much as a crutch. But, you know, you take the glasses away from somebody who needs them, and their life is going to be dramatically worse.
Yeah.
So I just thought I'd throw that in there and kind of give you another option against this kind of false thing. And honestly, Freud, his crutch was cocaine. So I'm not sure he has a whole lot to say about anything.
Interesting.
He was a mess.
Yeah, I don't know much about Freud's life. I didn't know that he was he struggled with that, with addiction. Wow, that's interesting to me. So, well, Stan, I really want to thank you for making that call. I really appreciate that. And God bless you.
Also, you too. His one last thing, Freud, you know, his theories, a lot of them were kind of necessary to get some of his friends out of trouble. A lot of the crazy mom stuff, and he was just a mess. He was a disaster.
Oh, wow.
So, anyway, love your show, man. Keep doing what you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much, Stan. I really appreciate that call. That was Stan calling from Albuquerque. He says he's a missionary in the Czech Republic, which is a very atheist situation that he's dealing with. So I really appreciate you calling, Stan, and appreciate your kind words about the show. And that's another great analogy, too. The worldview that we have, the glasses through which we see the world, that is so important. And we all have a worldview. And sometimes we're not aware of it. Sometimes we're not aware that we're actually wearing a pair of glasses. And that can be influenced from everything from your upbringing to your cultural background, your family background, and of course your faith background as well. That's going to color how you see the world. And so it's important to have the correct pair of glasses on. And even within Christianity, we obviously have to cooperate. Peter Kreeft once wrote a book a few years ago called Ecumenical Jihad. You know, we've got to get together and, you know, fight together against common foes and enemies in the culture, of course. But at the same time, we can't give up the whole idea of truth and what Jesus wanted and what is the church all about. And I really appreciate you listening to the show, Stan, and being part of that conversation. And and I once heard a joke about this, you know, speaking of glasses, you know, what's so special about the Catholic glasses? Well, they're the original pair. And there's an interesting argument for that. I mean, it's something to be explored, absolutely. And anyways, God bless you. I really appreciate those comments. Thank you for calling. And if you want to get in on this conversation, if you want to give me a call, 1-888-914-9149 is that number to call. And we'll be right back on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio after these short messages. Stick around. Got lots of great stuff to come.
The faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back. So glad to have you on the show. Sorry, I was just eating something. I probably shouldn't admit that on the radio, but I'm going to make a confession here. It's a general confession. I've broken into the stash of Halloween candy already. You know, who knows? With COVID, we might not even have Halloween. I don't want it to go to waste, so why not start now? So I've had a little Kit Kat bar, working on some stuff here, bite-sized pieces, and they're bite-sized pieces, so you don't feel so guilty when you eat the entire box of 100 bite-sized pieces. But anyways, I wanted to clear something up before the break, or just point you to something I referenced. I couldn't remember it at the time. I spoke about a famous individual who didn't really want to investigate the faith more deeply because they were afraid that it might be true and they might have to change their life. And who was that person? It was actually Graham Greene, the famous writer. And in fact, I learned about this on Twitter through Stephen Bullivant, who is a friend of mine on Twitter. He's a professor of theology and a sociology of religion at St. Mary's Twickenham in the UK. He's written an excellent book on why people left the Mass over the last few decades. It's really interesting. And he's a good guy to follow on Twitter. He said, "I learned something amazing today. Graham Greene once had the opportunity to meet Padre Pio, but he refused. He feared that if he did so, he'd feel compelled to change his lifestyle. There's something sad and beautiful about that." And that was a tweet by Stephen Bullivant. And another thing that he tweeted today, which I found kind of funny, and this was a quote from a bishop in Graham Greene's wonderful Monsignor Quixote. And the bishop says, quote, "No wine can be considered unimportant, my friend, since the marriage at Cana," end of quote. And you know what? I was going to respond, you know, there is one wine that can maybe considered unimportant, and that's the actual wine that you get at Cana. If you've been to the Holy Land, they sell the stuff, you know, to pilgrims by the caseloads. Hey, get some real wine from Cana. It's terrible. It's like the worst wine I've ever had in my life. So that's the great irony. Jesus makes the best wine of all time at Cana. But the stuff you can get there now, don't bother, folks. Don't bother. Take it from me. Going to go back to the phones now. Brian is calling from Bangor, Maine. Brian, welcome to the show. How are you?
Great, thank you. How are you?
I'm well. And Brian, I should tell you something. Yeah, I can hear you. And I should tell you something, Brian. When I was growing up in Nova Scotia, the American TV channels we got came from Bangor, Maine. So I am very familiar with Bangor, Maine.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, my next-door neighbor coached the University of Maine hockey. I know you're from the Toronto area.
That's where I live now. That's where I live now.
Yeah. Yeah, he's recruited in college. They ended up going to the NHL. There's like 36 players. So
the Maine Black Bears.
I was very fortunate to have him as my next-door neighbor and my great friend.
Well, hopefully he gave you some tickets, too.
Yeah, he's given me many tickets, yes.
it's a great program, the Maine Black Bears, college hockey, absolutely. So what's on your mind, Brian? What's up?
Yeah. Well, it was a great question. Your question in the beginning of the show was, have you ever had somebody say, "Oh, you Catholics, it's a crutch." And I actually have had that a few times. And I think maybe early on I was probably pretty defensive, but now I find it almost enjoyable. You know, can be very disarming for the other person, you know, when you just say, "Yeah, well, you're right." I heard Bishop Barron say once that, you know, the most important word in Catholicism in our faith is surrender. Mm. And that really struck me. I thought that was really, it just kind of captured my attention. And I've thought about that a lot. And four children are, well, adult children now in high school, and 13 to 30. So they're spread right out. One of our sons is a philosophy major. And when you're a philosophy major, it can go either way. You know?
Yeah, and, that's true.
Fortunately, I mean, I picked up some of his books and read a half a page and just completely lost in it. But he's doing well, and he's was out of the faith for a while. My wife and I came back into the faith together before we were married. And so, you know, this is our second marriage. But so we have quite a challenge with that, with the four, two girls and two boys. But I think what we find is because we're both, I mean, our closest times are when we're at church together and we're, you know, very involved.
Yeah.
And I think when people see that, you don't really have to argue a whole lot. They just kind of see it, and there's nothing wrong with being broken. You know, there's really nothing wrong with that.
That's a good point, Brian. I really appreciate that. I really appreciate that call. That's a great thing to say. That, you know, first of all, people do see it, and they're looking for something too. Because the fact is, we're all broken at some level. Some of us more so than others, and so we do need help. We do need crutches to get through life. And the question is, what's it going to be? Is it going to be a substance? Is it going to be another person that you put your hope in? Is it going to be your career? Is it going to be, you know, what is your crutch? And if your crutch is the cross, I think that's a good start. And I do appreciate that, Brian. Calling from Bangor, Maine. Wow. We've got people all across the great United States of America and around the world listening, of course, on relevantradio.com and through the app. Appreciate you, Brian. Thank you so much for that call. And next time I'm in Maine, I'm going to hit you up for some Black Bear tickets there. All right. We're going to go back to the phones now. Sue is calling from Modesto, California. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good, good. Thanks for calling. I can hear you okay. Yeah. We got a bit of a connection issue, but I think I can hear you.
Yeah, I'm on a landline. That's the problem.
Okay. They still exist.
But anyway. Right. And like I'm old school. I was raised in the 60s and 70s, and that's when I went to college. And I read Graham Greene, but I can't remember what he wrote or anything.
Mm-hmm,
and I was an English major, so like I read a lot of books that were written at that time, you know. And I was, you know, the Vietnam War was going on, and so I protested against the Vietnam War. However, at the same time, I got together with I was in a car wreck with a man from the Vietnam War, and he had a prosthetic leg, and we went out with two other couples and got drunk, and he died in that wreck, and I was unconscious for 21 days, you know, but I still, like, I was still rebelling against being a Catholic because I was raised a Catholic, and so now, you know, one thing led to another. I went into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm now living at the home I was raised in. And my parents are both dead. My dad was a teacher at Modesto Junior College, and my mother taught at a grade school, you know. And so now I'm, you know, my older sister is the landlady of the house, and I'm renting from her, you know. And I am just totally behind Relevant Radio.
Well, thank you so much for that call, Sarah. I really, really appreciate that, and I'm glad you're back home in the church, and thank you for your support of Relevant Radio. I really do appreciate that. And something interesting that you said was that you mentioned the AA program, Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's obviously so much parallels between that 12-step program and, you know, really surrendering, you know, talking about surrender. Our last caller talked about surrendering to God. You know, admitting, you know, as people in the program say, you know, hi, my name is so-and-so, and I'm an alcoholic. The first step is to admit your issue. We have to admit that we're sinners, and we are in need of God's grace, and we're in need of a lot of help from Him, and we get that in the church. I really do appreciate that call, Sue, calling from Modesto, California. We're going to go now to Robert, who's calling from L.A. Robert, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing pretty well, but I'm getting on now. Toward the end of my life, actually that isn't true, because I'm in my 60s. But the situation is that I was born Catholic. I was baptized back in 1956 when I was 3 months old. But there's no sponsors. They did what they were supposed to do. I was not brought up in that faith, and I was left pretty much without any kind of moral compass. It wasn't until I was about in my 20s when I actually joined the Catholic Church through confirmation. I was there for a little while. Mm-hmm. But then the Protestants scared me away by saying that the Catholic Church is corrupt, that it's the Antichrist, synagogue of Satan, and so on. And they don't use scriptures entirely, and you'll go to hell if you go there. So that scared me away. But there's no agreement with the Protestants. Everybody has a different idea. The Catholic Church is unified. So what I'm trying to do is I want to see if there's any way that I can get back into the Catholic Church without being scared, usually looking for scriptures, which cannot really be argued with. So, but there's tradition, and the whole ball of yarn is very convoluted.
Okay.
So, but I've listened to Irrelevant Radio for some time, and I'm hoping that you can give me some help in that issue. Catholic Church is the true and living church on the earth today. Can we find that? Is there any way they can get back in there without being scared away again?
Now, were you baptized as a Catholic, Robert, you said?
Yes, sir, I was.
Okay. All right, so the good news is for you, because you are a baptized Catholic, getting back in is actually a lot easier than getting in from scratch or from square one, because really all that's necessary for you to be back in full communion with the Catholic Church is to simply make a good confession and go see a priest and talk to him about that. So in terms of getting back in, the actual mechanism of getting back in, it's easy. I mean, it's not easy to make a good confession, of course. God will help you with that. Don't be afraid of that. It'll be a source of grace and healing and peace for you, no matter how long it's been. And a priest will be able to walk you through that. So I'd encourage you to go to your local parish and try to talk to a priest about that. And I'll pray for you, Robert. In terms of what you heard from others about the church, very often, and this happened to me too, and this is one of the reasons why I walked away from my Catholic faith when I was in university. I was kind of an agnostic at that time. I wasn't practicing. But I met some very well-meaning, very sincere Protestants who were doing campus ministry, and they convinced me to leave the Catholic Church. Now, they had all kinds of erroneous ideas about what Catholics believed and what they practiced, that they worship Mary, you know, that they worshiped a piece of bread, but it's not really Christ. And, of course, that's a reference to the Eucharist and a lot of other things very similar to what you were saying a minute ago. And these people were fed, untruths about the church as well, whether from their pastor or what they'd learned. And this is what they honestly believed. And they sincerely thought they were helping me by getting me out of the Catholic Church and anybody else that they could convince to leave the Catholic Church. They thought that they were doing them a favor and bringing them into a more pure relationship with Christ. Well, Archbishop Fulton Sheen said years and years ago a very famous line that's so true. He said, there aren't more than 100 people in the United States who hate the Catholic Church, but there are millions of people who hate what they wrongly believe to be the Catholic Church. They just have the wrong idea about what the church actually teaches and why. So, you know, a great thing is that we have a catechism. We can look up what the church actually teaches. It's there. You can find it online. In the age of Google, in the age of the internet, nobody really has, at some level, we don't have an excuse anymore. If we really do want to know the truth, it is out there. It's like the X-Files. The truth is out there, and it can be known. And in terms of scripture, that's one of the reasons why on our sister program, The Faith Explained, I spent so much time explaining the scripture from a Catholic perspective, because it is a Catholic book. It was written by Catholics. It was put together by Catholics. It was canonized by the church. We wouldn't know what scripture was without the Catholic Church. And so it's a Catholic book. And as a result, there's nothing in there that contradicts the faith, and there's nothing in the faith that contradicts the Bible, properly understood. And so we've got to get people to see that. And I really want to thank you for listening to Relevant Radio, Robert, and I hope that it's helped you on your spiritual journey at some level. And I think it has, by the sounds of it. So thanks again for that call from Los Angeles. That was Robert calling from LA. Really appreciate that call. And I want to say something else to you guys as well. As Catholics, we are responsible for forming our conscience. We've got to be involved in the culture and in the governance of our nation and our communities. Our church depends on this. Your family depends on this. And the most vulnerable members of society depend on it too. And that's why Father Rocky, who of course is the CEO, the executive director of Relevant Radio, Father Rocky Hoffman, has written a brand new ebook. Perhaps you've heard of it. I think you have probably heard of it. You probably heard the commercials. It's called Vote Your Conscience. But maybe you still haven't taken that step to download it, because it's free. It's an ebook. There is no downside to this whatsoever. It's going to help you learn how to form your conscience around truth, beauty, goodness, Catholic teaching, and then use that well-formed conscience in all areas of life to make good moral choices, raising your family, evangelizing those around you, and when we go to the polls in just a few days. So again, this ebook is free. Vote Your Conscience by Father Rocky Hoffman. All you have to do is go to relevantradio.com/vote to get this book. relevantradio.com/vote, or you can sign up on the free Relevant Radio app. It's a free app, it's a free book. Wow, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good 1-2 punch right there. And I'll be back with a great segment at the end. I'm going to dip into the listener mailbag for just an amazing question. You're going to want to stick around for this. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Faith, facts, and fun. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
It's the walk of life. All right. Walking with that crutch. Lean on it. The crutch is real. Use it. The cross. It's real. It'll help you. Really good phone calls today on the program. Stan the man. Stan from Albuquerque. Thanks for calling, man. I really appreciate that call earlier. That was great to hear from you. Hope you call back. Robert from LA. That was a good call, too. We'll be praying for you tonight and all of our callers tonight who called in on the Family Rosary Across America. Karen Moran sent me a special note saying that we'll pray for you, Robert, as you seek to journey back into the Catholic Church. Sue from Modesto, thank you for calling as well. That's great stuff. Really, really good calls. You know what? Another way that people can contact us is through email. Now, you can tweet at me, at Cale Clark, or you can email the show, cale@relevantradio.com. And I want to dip into the email mailbag, if you will, the virtual mailbag, for this question that comes to us from Marilyn, who is listening in Eustis, Florida, on 90.3 FM WIGW. And she says this, "Hi, Cale. I volunteer at Orphan Rock Ministry Thrift Store in Florida." Well, that's great. That's awesome. God bless you for that. That sounds like a great ministry. "While going through donated items, I came across a plaque of the Ten Commandments that is different from the set of Ten Commandments that I learned about. I was shocked when I was told the Catholic Church changed the Ten Commandments. Jesus condemned any changes to the Holy Bible, so why are the wrong Ten Commandments being taught to our children?" Well, thank you for that question, Marilyn. That's really interesting. I came across this plaque, and it's a different set of Ten Commandments than what we're used to in the Catholic Church. Well, this is a question about the fact that ultimately, and you may not know this, but Catholics and Protestants tend to use a different set of Ten Commandments. Now, why is that? Do you remember back in, this was in 2003. I'm really reaching back here in time. Do you remember Justice Roy Moore, that judge who was Alabama's chief justice? And he had that set of Ten Commandments displayed in his courtroom. And people had a problem with this. And they asked him to remove it. And he said, "No, I'm not going to." And within a year, both he and the set of Ten Commandments were gone from that courtroom. And people noticed, you know, when they were being removed and it was on TV and everything, that it was a different set of Ten Commandments than, you know, if you're a Catholic watching this, you say, well, this is a different set than what I'm used to. And by the way, the reason why, you know, he had this in his courtroom, and we Catholics say that the Ten Commandments are applicable to everybody, not just Christians, because this has to do with natural law, not just revealed law. But these are sort of laws that are written on the conscience of every person. And the U.S. Declaration of Independence makes use of this. It also makes a natural law appeal when it says, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident, you know, that all men are created equal, yada, yada, yada. So this idea of natural law, the Ten Commandments are very much bound up with that. But we see that there's a different list on the set of Ten Commandments that Judge Roy Moore had, and that Marilyn found, seems to have found, as she was opening up some items that were donated to the Orphan Rock Ministry Thrift Store. So let's explain this a little bit. All right. Here is the, generally speaking, the Protestant set of Ten Commandments. Okay. They would have commandment number one as, "I am the Lord your God, you shall have no other gods before me." Okay. So far, so good. That sounds the same as our set. And then commandment number two, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image. This command against graven images. Okay, the third commandment, don't take the name of the Lord your God in vain. The fourth commandment, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. You're already sensing, oh, there's a difference here. The fourth commandment in the Catholic world is different. Number five, honor your father and mother. Thou shalt not kill. Number six. Number seven would be, you shall not commit adultery. Number eight, you shall not steal. Number nine, you shall not bear false witness. And number 10, you shall not covet. Now, what about the catechism? What about the catechism of the Catholic Church? If you were to look at the catechism and look at the list of commandments that Catholics traditionally use, you'll find them enumerated in this way. Number one, I am the Lord your God. You shall not have strange gods before me. Number two, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Number three, remember to keep holy the Lord's day. And it actually uses the term the Lord's day. Number four, honor your father and mother. So that, you know, the fourth commandment. As St. Jose Maria Escrivá said, the sweetest precept of the Decalogue, honor your father and mother. Number five, you shall not kill. Number six, you shall not commit adultery. We always hear about sins against the sixth commandment. Number seven, you shall not steal. Number eight, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. Number nine, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife. Number 10, you shall not covet your neighbor's goods. So the Catholic list, if you will, really comes from the tradition of the Church Fathers, especially St. Augustine. We talked about him earlier in the program. So he kind of relied on the list of Ten Commandments that was presented by Moses in Deuteronomy chapter 5. Now, Deuteronomy is traditionally ascribed to Moses. It's one of the first five books of the Bible, the Pentateuch, which are traditionally, you know, Moses is seen as the source there. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. So that list from Deuteronomy chapter 5 of the Ten Commandments is really the one that Catholics always learn, going back to the time of the fathers, going back to Augustine, going back to the Middle Ages even. Even after the Protestant Revolution, even after the Protestant Reformation, which really wasn't a reformation, it was a revolution. It was starting from scratch, breaking off and forming another church. Martin Luther would agree with Catholics about this list of 10 commandments. The same number, same arrangement in the early 16th century. But what happened after that was John Calvin came along, and John Calvin, or, you know, Jean Calvin, if you will, he felt that Luther didn't go far enough in his reforms, and so he created his own movement, which became known as Calvinism, and he had a bunch of followers who came after him, and they decided, no, we got to make a really clean break here. Let's go to the list of commandments that are mentioned in another book of Moses, the book of Exodus, chapter 20. So there's another list of 10 commandments in Exodus chapter 20, and it's a bit of a different arrangement. And I think one of the reasons why Calvin chose to do this is he really wanted to make a super clean break with the Catholic tradition. And let's go with this list of commandments. And maybe he had other reasons too, which I'm not aware of. I'm not a scholar. I'm not a Calvin scholar, really. So I'm not sure if he had other things on his mind at the time. But, you know, then the question comes to be, you know, whose version of the Ten Commandments is best? Now, they're both based on Scripture, right? They both come from Scripture. And this really brings us to Marilyn's question, you know. Hey, I found this other list, and that's obviously the list that derives from Calvin that really comes from Exodus chapter 20. It's also from the Bible, but it's different from the list I learned as a Catholic. So are we being taught the wrong set? Should we be using this way of presenting the Ten Commandments? Well, here's something that you should know. Okay, both the list that's in Exodus 20 that Protestants tend to use and the list that's in Deuteronomy chapter 5, which Catholics tend to use, they're both scriptural, and ultimately they both derive from the same tradition. But now some people might say, go to the earlier book, right? Exodus was written first, right? Genesis, Exodus, it's the second book of the Bible. So let's go with the earliest set of commandments in Exodus 20. That's probably the more original set. That's probably the best. Let's go back to the beginning. Well, there's another view. You know, we would say that, hang on here, maybe the one in Deuteronomy should be used instead. And I'll tell you why. Because not that the Exodus set is bad, but the Deuteronomy set comes later. And you might say, well, isn't earlier a better thing? Let's go back to the source. Well, no, actually later might be better. Because don't forget, Deuteronomy is also a book of Moses. there's been more reflection on these things by the people of God, and there's more of a perhaps an understanding of these commandments that wasn't there in the earlier time. So, you know, even with, you know, how biblical texts come to us, right? Some of these books were worked on over a period of time, and, you know, you might be able to isolate, well, this part of the book, you know, whether it's a gospel or whether it's a, you know, another book in the Bible, maybe part of it was written before it was finished by someone else. Well, it really doesn't matter whether there's one author or two authors, or whether Moses himself wrote it, or whether it comes from the tradition of his teaching. It doesn't matter, because it's the final form of the text that gets canonized, gets put into the Bible. So you might argue that's what's the Word of God, right? So you might argue that the latter form of the commandments, the latter set in Deuteronomy 5, is maybe a little bit better because there's been more reflection on it. And it's interesting, too, because let's look at the first set in Exodus chapter 20. The wife, you know, do not covet your neighbor's wife. It's almost saying, it almost seems like the wife is kind of lumped in with like household objects, right? Hang on here, right? That's not a good thing. Okay. Moses in Deuteronomy has a separate commandment for coveting your neighbor's wife. Okay. Cause your wife is not an object. Women are not objects. No person is an object. They're not an object to be used. They're a person to be loved. So this actually creates a new dignity, a higher dignity for marriage and for women that corresponds to God's view. And we see this fleshed out more in the teaching of the church. On yesterday's program, Melissa Molesky joined us to talk about St. John Paul the Great and his vision for the feminine genius and God's plan for woman. And it was a great episode. You should check that out. Listen to the podcast. Because, you know, as we go further and look deeper into the mystery, we you know, this was always the case, but we're discovering more and more truth inside. So anyways, that is one reason why we use the set in the Catholic Church that's in the book of Deuteronomy. So I hope that answers your question a little bit, Marilyn, writing from Florida. It's a very, very good question. A very, very good question indeed. I'm glad that you asked that. Wow. What a week it's been on the Cale Clark Show. I hope you have a chance to, on the weekend, check out some of the other episodes that we had. You're also going to want to dive deep into the Faith Explained. I don't know if you know this, but we just started a brand new series called Unlocking the Book of Revelation. That's our sister program that airs every weekday right after the Holy Mass at 12:30 Central on Relevant Radio and on the app. And this is a perfect time to get into it. We just started looking at Revelation, just jumping into the text. And the book of Revelation confuses a lot of people. Let's be straight about this. The end of the world. Who is the Antichrist? When will Jesus return? What is the meaning of all these beasts and numbers and the four horsemen of the apocalypse and all of that? We're going to break it down for you. So jump in, download those podcasts of the show, and tell your friends. I've had a lot of fun with it. I really do enjoy the book of Revelation. I know that you will too. And you can say, hey, now I know what it means. And that's a great thing. So thank you so much for listening to the show this week, and I hope you'll join us on Monday as well. Hope you have a blessed weekend. Really want to thank Lucas Holt, our producer, for doing such, you know, incredible work. A lot of great work behind the scenes. Really appreciate you, Lucas. Patrick Alog screened the calls today. Karen Moran works social media, and she's going to be on the Family Rosary Across America later on. But first, there's Timory, so stay tuned for her. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.